Welcome back to the Woven Energy Podcast on Real Practical Shamanism with me, Joseph Sikora, and as always, Damon Smith. We are here once again to talk about shamanism from the ground up. So this week, we are going to continue our journey into stage four. We took a little break last week where we talked about the shamanic staff, or the sawa, but we're now going to continue with stage four. Now, if you remember in the last episode on stage four, we explored the first four core energy changes that we can use. So just a quick recap on that. We have our first pair was Tolgor and Negdek, which is Jag and Meld in our Armabella terms.
Well pronounced, Joe. Well done.
Oh, brilliant. Did I get that?
And,
you know, just to quickly explain the Armabella terms, you know, we Armabella is our way of trying to package up shamanism in a way for the more kind of rational, logical, Western kind of audience. And we do it in a way where we don't mention the word shamanism at all, with all the cultural baggage associated with that word. And so these terms, these English terms, are meant to give a little bit of a flavor, of what the energy change represents. So well worth getting to know those as well. So we have Jag and Meld, which is Tolgor and Negdek. And then we've also, our second pairing was Torrent and Kindle. So Tolan and Asak. Is it Asak, Damon? Asak?
Asak.
Okay. So the purpose of this episode is to now explore the remaining eight core energy changes. And I think we made the point, didn't we, Damon, before you haul me up on it, that there are lots more than eight energy changes. This is just a way of getting started, I guess, or just trying to understand the eight core energy changes that, you know, the eight trigrams, the whatever they, wherever, however we want to envisage them. So do you want to just explain a little bit more in a better way than I just did then about the eight core changes,
well, and
then
we'll move on to the last four? Let's just talk about this number eight. I mean, the whole purpose of level four is to start to get a handle on the energy changes that occur within nature, and the, you know, in shamanic understanding or in shamanic practice, the human body, the human being, is simply an extension of nature, or just simply an embedded part of nature. That's what we're aiming for in shamanism, is to become an undifferentiated part of nature. And we are, it's coming to a recognition of that. These eight changes, these particular eight changes, were picked out by people who were into this stuff a very long time ago in China. Now, I can understand why they've come down on these eight. The changes that go on within nature are changes in energy. And if you think of nature as an extension of the creation, the factors of the universe, or the start of the universe, the factors that went on in, or changes that went on in the start of the universe, have implications that echo down through the generations and represent themselves as commonly recurring energy changes that happen in our everyday lives today and happen throughout the universe. And there are loads of them. There are loads and loads of commonly recurring energy changes. But these eight are quite obvious ones. They're quite, you know, if you were to get a shaman who had no contact with these eight, the model of these eight, as they call the eight trigrams, and to get them to, you know, give you a list of commonly occurring energy changes, it's likely that even though they'd never heard of the eight trigrams, these eight would be somewhere on that list, or it may be seven of them, or it might be, yeah. Does that make some kind of sense? But there would probably be a few others on the list of the most important ones, and we will talk about some of those as well in future, but it just seems to me that this list of eight is out there in the world. People know about it. There's easy access to the most famous book about it, the I Ching. People have easy access to that book. I think it's one of the most translated books in the world. Unfortunately, the stuff that's being translated wasn't that fantastic in the original Chinese. Basically, you need to ignore all the Confucian nonsense that's been, well, let's not say it's nonsense, but it's of no interest to a shaman. The you've got to ignore all the Confucian bump or gunk that's been used to bulk out that book.
The baggage.
And so these 8 changes are as good as any. We can't talk about all the changes because, or we could do eventually, I guess. We can't talk about all the changes.
I mean, we've talked about it in previous episodes where eventually we'll move on to the 64 hexagrams, which I presume is the next level and, you know, representing all of the other, well, a lot of the other energy changes, the 64 hexagrams. Would that be right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And I think now is a good chance to just plug your book, Damon, if it's still available. I mean, gosh, it's like years ago now, but you wrote your own, well, how would you describe
call
it, Damon?
I'm not sure you could call it writing.
you published a book on the I Ching.
Cut out all the nonsense. Yeah.
You basically stripped the I Ching of a lot of stuff and then published it under the name of Damon Smith.
It's the only non-Confucian I Ching in existence, at least in English.
Because there was a few versions of it as well. And so which one is available now? And, you know, where can people find it?
I don't know if it's available, mate. I have no idea. I'd have to check that. It's called the Western White Tiger I Ching. That's its name. So, and I haven't looked at it for years. I don't know if it's available or not, but you can do a search and see.
That certainly doesn't sound cultish, Damon, the Western White Tiger. But yes. Okay.
So what the Western White Tiger is the, there is in Chinese esotericism, I think we talked about this on Heretics at some point in time. In Chinese esotericism, there are 4 mega constellations that represent the turning of the seasons. And the Western White Tiger is one of them. They also represent the different directions. So the White Tiger is the animal of the West, if you like. And we are in the West. We're Westerners trying to understand esotericism. This is a heretic subject rather than a woven energy subject, but we're trying to understand esotericism that comes from the East, and we're in the West. So that's why I picked out Western White Tiger. That's it.
Brilliant.
It's Western in that sense. So yeah, just before we go on, mate, I'd just like to say hello to our awesome patrons and thank them very much. And just to thank our very latest patron, Pamela Agin. Apologies for pronouncing the name. That's wonderful, Pamela. Thank you for signing up and joining our awesome crew of patrons. You guys know who you are. You know how appreciated you are. But I'll just briefly thank Pamela, because we do try to thank all of our patrons when they join us. So that's fantastic. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much. And also, don't forget, you can become a patron by visiting us at patreon.com/wovenenergy. And you can see all sorts of extra bits and bobs that you'll get if you sign up as a patron. So there are various layers and tiers to it, aren't there, Damon? And more stuff's going in there now, I presume.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, excuse me. A plan at present is to put some of the growth stuff into the patrons area. That should be appearing shortly in there.
Yeah.
So, and that's like a stopgap measure while we get the growth sorted out. The growth is still there, such as it is for those that already have access. But what I'm saying is we took the decision that we put some growth stuff into Patreon because it's easier to manage. And just to let us focus on getting more episodes out, which, as you can see, we've been doing of late. This is our rate of episode release has hugely increased. Well done, Joe.
I feel we're getting back into the swing of it, aren't we? It's
yeah, absolutely.
It really is a joy, you know. And I've kind of missed it, to be honest. Well, I have missed it. It's it's nice just sitting down and catching up each week.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah.
So where we got to last time, we covered the first 4 of these 8, Tolka, Negdek, Totolan, and Sach. So in this one, we want to cover the next 4, Shurug, Egeldek, Tyrak, and Tengis. As you know, I have a love-hate relationship.
We've
got to cover it, mate. We've got to cover it. You know, I have a love-hate relationship with it. And I think maybe for the next 2, Shurug and Egeldek, I think it might be good to give a little bit of background on a bit of Mongolian folk tradition that might help understand this. There's a thing called the Toriron Buchig, which has become a folk tradition that's carried out in Mongolia, basically a local community or a bunch of people, usually including a number of shamans, will stand in a circle, a sort of grove around a central point, which is often the a bonfire, or it could be a tree if there's enough space around it, or it could be a cairn, one of these cairns that they build out of rocks in Mongolia, or anything like that. It could be. The community or group then do this type of spirit dance, which is known as Toirun Buchig. Now, it's not a particularly difficult thing to see. You could probably even see it on YouTube. But just to explain, like a lot of these folk traditions, it has become, although Mongolia is still one of the most shamanistic countries in the world, it has become somewhat degenerate from its original, if you like, shamanic form. Toirun Buchig originally is something that we did a little bit of it at the recent Woven Energy seminar in Austria. A number of shamans will get together and they'll practice their spirit dance together in a grove. And typically they'll stand in a circle around a central point, and then they will extend their hands outwards to either side in the Tirok position, and then join hands with the people on either side of them. That's the base pattern. So if you imagine this ring of people around a central point, a tree or whatever, that are in a Tirok position, but with hands linked around a central point. And then the idea is to do spirit dance in a fairly formulaic way. What I mean by fairly formulaic is this Toirun Buchig has become a sort of crossover between folk dance and proper shamanism. If it was done in a fully shamanic way, it would become rather more varied than it is. But because of the way it's done in modern times, you've probably got a few people in the circle who can do it well, but you've got a bunch of people who are kind of just there for folk dance. They're not there to be shamans, basically. So let me describe how it works. Now, describe how these next two changes.
Before you do that, I mean, that's really interesting, because I think there's all sorts of practices around the world that are similar to that. I mean, just off the top of my head, I know there's some in Sufism where they form a circle and sort of like run around in a circle and then run backwards. It's fascinating to watch. You've got the whirling dervishes as well, but there's also one that springs to mind in Hinduism with the Garba, where there's a central point with the gods in the middle, and then you dance around the outside. And it's, you know, each year we go, and it's very dance-like and formulaic, but it's like with all these things, if you scratch the surface just a little bit, you can kind of see where this stuff comes from, can't you?
It's very close to the nature of human beings. If you think of what we're like as a species, we have been successful as a species through collaboration. Mm. We have come together and made ourselves more than we would be individually. We're not a very individualistic species, although you'd never know it from the kind of materialistic nonsense that gets promoted in the modern world. The sort of, I call it the I'm all right, Jack culture that's heavily steeped in the miasma. We have been effective animals, effective organisms through our collaboration with each other. So this is a very Toirun Buchig, a very collaborative form of dance, spirit dance.
Yeah.
Shamanic
technique itself is very individualistic. I like to think of it like you are an individual within a group.
Yeah, that's to do with the role of the shaman in supporting the group. But I don't think that shamanistic practice is actually very individualistic. Mm. A lot of the shamanic practices that are what you might call basic have been are made more complex by being in a group.
Mm.
And people do them badly because they're in a group. And this is why early on in shamanic practice, I often recommend doing a lot of practice where you are totally alone, there's nobody else there. That is more about the learning process that you have to go through. I don't think shamanism is actually very individualistic in its actual nature. What it is in order to learn things, sometimes you have to protect yourself from the miasma. You have to sort of sidestep the miasma in order to move forwards as a shaman.
Yeah.
And being alone early on, especially early on in your practice, can really help with that. And so I wouldn't say it's individualistic. I'd say that there are aspects of early shamanic practice that can benefit from being alone, which I don't think is the same thing as being individualistic, if you see what I mean.
No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, and it makes sense because, you know, I think some of the early techniques we talked about, especially with stage three, and especially the videos that we sent each other, you know, with, around the bonfire, and you always, the shaman's always feeding off others, right? Or there's always... Yes. Other people there forming that circle. So yeah, absolutely. Totally get
Which that. Is why it's great. Which is why it's great to do spirit dance with another shaman or two or three if you can. I mean, myself and Paul were doing it over in Austria. We just did a bit by ourselves at the side. Oh, that was so good to have somebody who can actually do it. To do it with you is amazing because you have the practical reality of this. Most people, myself included, when you're trying to learn to become a shaman, the only shaman you've got access to, if any, is your teacher. That's it. And usually they're quite far ahead of you. To have somebody who's not far ahead of you that you can practice this stuff with is absolutely wonderful. But like I said, that's not what Toyrin Butchik tends to be like in Mongolia today. It tends to be, you might have, if you had a crowd of, say, 20 people doing it, you might have four or five shamans among them who could do it quite well. And then there's a bunch of, there's probably another four or five, what you might call ordinary people who are a bit heavily steeped in shamanism, who can do it quite well. But then everybody else is just going through the motions and doing it. It's like just a normal folk dance, you know. And you can really see that when you see them doing it. You can really see the difference. But the clever thing with Toyrin Butchik and how it works is there is a mechanism built in that enables people to, as part of the dance, to work at their own level. And I'm going to explain how that works. So this is, I'm sort of explaining this in a group way to talk about how that energy thread that we've been talking about on the episode before last, how that runs through the group. Because just like when we're talking about on the last one, we talked about the staff, the energy thread extends through the staff that is part of you. Done well, or done as it should be done, this technique, Toyrin Butchik, extends through the entire group. It's one thread. It's not every individual person has their own thread. It's one thread running through the entire group. And so what it tends to be, in simplistic terms, is the movement of the dance tends to move in a circle. Everybody's going, say, clockwise around the central point, the tree or the cairn or the bonfire, whatever it is. Everyone's moving in a circle. And this is why it's called the round dance, the Toyrin Butchik. They're moving in a circle around that while making shamanic movements, a spirit dance type of movements in a fairly minimal kind of way, because you are holding hands with people on either side of you, but you're still doing the movements that you would do in your solo spirit dance. It's the same movements, but also the thread is running through the group as one organism, ideally. The thread is not just your thread. So the movements that you're making are very often driven by the thread that's running through the group as a whole. And this is really nice for you not deciding at each stage. Or, you know, you go like choreography. You never want to end up like choreography in your spirit dance. Even if you get really good at choreography, this is the dance step that I've done first. Now, what dance step am I going to do next? Oh, I'll do this dance step next. What dance step am I going to do next? Oh, I'll do this dance step next. You never want to end up in that frame because that's not spirit dance. You want a continual ebb and flow.
Well, you're not in jellicity either, are you?
Energy. Exactly, exactly. But the point is you can simulate, you can fake it by getting good at that decision-making, yeah? I just instantly know what step I'm going to do next because I'm very familiar with these dance steps and I can just decide which one to do. No, you want to allow the energy flow to determine and the changes that are going on within your dance and within nature, your dance radar, as I've described it. You want to allow that flow to decide for you what dance movements, if you want to call them that, you are actually doing, what techniques you're employing in the dance. And the great thing about the Rand dance done well is that you don't even have to worry about anything like that, because if you're with a group of people who can do it, they are forming collectively the energy pattern that is the thread that runs through the dance. you're just following that. You're just riding that like a surfer. You know, you're surfing the wave. You're not deciding what the wave's doing. You're just surfing that wave. And it can be wonderful. And even the little bit we did in Austria was really great. I think a lot of people got a lot out of that.
Is it a similar idea when, for instance, the Evenks do something similar where they sit around in a circle or they stand around in a circle and they do the same thing but with instruments? Or is that a different purpose?
Of course, it's the same kind of thing. All these techniques are very, very similar in purpose. But the key fundamental point, if you're talking about level four here, is through that group of people, is to get that thread extending. And all the things we talked about, Tulko, Negdek, Tzotzol, and Asak, support that. They support that movement. Now, the way that Shurug and Egeldek come into it, for reference, Shurug is squall, which would be in trigram terms, that would be broken baseline, solid midline, solid top line. That's the coming and going. It's the ebb and flow of the tides. It's compression and expansion. It's the waves breaking on the shore, rolling back and then breaking on the shore again. It's this ebb and flow of energy within nature that occurs again and again. I mean, there's so many examples of Shurug. It's not real. What happens there is that sometimes people will naturally bend the thread or move the thread in towards the center of the circle and then out again. I guess a bit like a shamanistic kind of, you know, like the hokey cokey that people do when they're kids, you know, shamanic hokey cokey. Yeah. But in a more spontaneous kind of way, just a
really quick little side note. My old high school in the music department, the guy who wrote Okie Kokie, I think it was the guy who wrote Okie Kokie, applied to be head of music and he didn't get the job.
He should have done. He's legendary. I don't know if people know what we're talking about with the hokey cookie, but it certainly doesn't look like the way kids do it, which is unusual, because obviously the guy who wrote it wasn't a kid or came up with it wasn't a kid. But that's not how you actually do it. But just in that way, it's much more like compression and expansion. And so that kind of general movement, and the way you do that, one of the ways you do that is you just simply, in the dance, remember you're moving clockwise or anti-clockwise around the central point. You just, the energy thread is just led forwards, i.e. you're moving in towards the center of the circle. Typically, as you do that, you start to make the half-task position. But of course, you can't fully make the half-task position, and you don't want to, because you're holding out the hands of people either side of you. And then that naturally makes a returning wave, a keshi, as it would be called in Japanese. It makes a returning wave, which naturally creates the expansion out again for the circle as it goes around. But if you think of one thread moving around one energy thread, you can see that the energy thread is not just blandly moving around the circle. It's also compressing into the center and then moving outwards again and expanding. It's compression and expansion, but it's also forwards and backwards. And that's a great exercise for coming to understand that compression and expansion and forwards and backwards are actually the same thing. They're actually both Shurug, compression and expansion of the energy. They're actually both Shurug. It's only our language that makes them seem like different things. They're actually, compression and expansion are actually synonyms in shamanic terms. That's probably the best. Sorry, compression and expansion coming and going. So compression and expansion coming and going, those things, those pairs are synonyms in shamanism. Yeah. And so ebb and flow and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's Shurug, but also in doing that, you're also exhibiting Egeldek naturally, because that energy flow that's flowing through the dancers as they're moving around the circle is going in a cycle. It's going around in a circle. And that's what Egeldek is. Egeldek is cycles of energy. And this is why these two things are two in one. They're Ahari in Chinese, or they're Futatsu Totsu in Japanese. These two energy changes mutually support each other, and you see them in everything. And what you start to get, combining the compression and the expansion, the coming and going, and the circular cycling of energy within nature, you think of like a whirlpool or the galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, things going round in cycles and circles. Those two things when you thread them both together, they start to make spiral energy. They start to make a kind of spiral energy, which is the most common kind of energy that you see in, should we say, experienced spirit dancers, if you want to call that, people who are quite good at spirit dance. You see an awful lot of spiral energy, and that's because the relationship in their dance between the Shurug and the Egel deck is very vibrant. It's very alive. The two things are contributing to the standing of that energy radar that we're creating for nature, and they're two of the things that are making it rich. Two of the main things that are making it rich. And so what you start to get, even though it's just one ring of people going around in one circle, you do start to get a weave of a kind going on here, because that pattern stands throughout the circle. Ideally, if everybody's good enough at spirit dance, the energy thread that runs through you as a dancer in Torin Butchig is extending through every single person in that circle as one continuous thread that is moving as one entity, as itself, but has a type of complexity within it, which is that the interplay of Shurug and Egel deck. Sure, if the people are good enough, you can also start playing around. That means you would be fairly experienced shamans doing this together. Try and get that number of people together who are fairly experienced shamans to do this. It'd be tough. But you can start playing with things like Totolon, which is like taking control at different points in times. Where does the light shine on the ring? Sort of thing. And the Sach, putting new energies in to make it more interesting. But in order to do that, you have to be able to do what Fritz and me and Paul were doing in those seminars, is we're able to ride that, yeah? Because of the responsiveness that's been built into the shamanic practice, somebody changes something spontaneously, the other person can naturally follow that change and just go with it. But because they're in a deep, deep state of chelicity and they have built a lot of variety in their spirit dance, and there's always somewhere you can go. There's always somewhere the energy can go, irrespective of what changes go into it. So that's sort of my explanation of Shurug and Egel deck. But if you want to put it into your own individualistic spirit dance, the coming and going is very simple. That energy thread that you're making can compress and expand as you're moving between Havtas and Tereolt, in a very simplistic terms. As you move to Havtas, there's a kind of compression going on, and as you move to Tereolt, there's an expansion going on. And then you can start gyring that, you can start egeldecking that. I don't know if that's a word, but you can start doing that through that exercise we talked about before, where one arm does the Havtas, and the other hand's simultaneously going out for the Tereolt. And so therefore you can do Shurug and Egel deck in pairs just through that exercise. One arm goes into Tereolt as the other goes into Havtas, and then you change sides to the other side.
Do you know what's really interesting here? It's beginning to really make sense in my mind a little bit now. Cool. And I'm linking it to back when you showed us some very specific shamanic movements. I hate to use that word movements, but there was one where I think you said it was from a Japanese tradition where you expand outwards with your left arm down, your right hand up, you spiral it back in, off to the center, into the folded wings position.
Yes.
You gyre it round, so you spiral it round, and then you go back out the other side, right arm down, left hand up, and it's like you're pulling in the heaven and the earth into yourself, spiral, and then this way. And
yes, that's the same kind of thing.
And I really like that because it's representative of all of these energies that we're talking about, all of these energy changes, all coalescing into one example, one thing that you can grapple with and go, I can see all of these things going on in this one movement. And of course, then it's about, and I might be talking about stage three here, as you know, but, and then it's of course, where do you go from there, and how do you bring that spontaneity into it? And but yeah, it's. I think that's.
Well, I think what we're doing here is we're giving an overview, aren't we, of these? We've done one episode with four changes. We're doing another episode with another four changes. But really, what we should go back and do is a whole episode on one change, because there's so much stuff within a single change. So for instance, you know, if you're doing your spirit dance solo, the ways in which you can do Egeldech are not, just verging on infinite. One of the things I did, for instance, in the Tillin exercise that we talked about at one point in time, is as you come in out of Tyrolten into the Haftas position, you can take that energy. So say your right arm is coming in from the right towards the left, you can do a little Egeldech there, a little circle of the energy, and just keep it moving. It comes towards you. There's a bit of compression and expansion using Shurug. It goes away from you again, and then it circles out into a bigger circle, which might be a turn off to your left as you open out into Tyrolt again. There's so many things like this that you can do. But I think all I wanted to do with these two episodes, the one before last and this one, is just give an overview of these things in a way that might help. And so on this one, I'm using this Torun and Butchig. So if you keep in mind that Torun and Butchig is still the way that I'm explaining this. I could explain it all in terms of individualistic spirit dance as well, individual spirit dance as well. But let's just go with that and go on to the next two, which are the infamous Tyrak and Tengis. Now, let's leave Tyrak till last. Traditionally, Tyrak I would explain first and then Tengis, but let's just go on to Tengis. So Tengis is solid baseline, a solid midline, and a broken top line. What this is sort of what I've been talking about. It's that action where it's nurturing to become. It's nurturing energy to become something. So rather than, as I'm going around the circle in Torun and Butchig, rather than me making decisions about what I'm going to do, allowing the energy stream that's flowing through the whole group and coming into me to obviously affect what I'm doing, allowing that to drive me, if you like. You know, it could be a branch, right? I could have my arm against a branch in the wind, and as the branch is moving around, I'm allowing that to drive my spirit dance. The tree and the wind are deciding where my spirit dance goes. This is no different. But that energy that's coming to me, but nurturing that energy, taking it and making something more out of it in whatever way by introducing other changes into it is the skill of Tengis. We call it Mir in Armabella terminology. It's the skill of taking that skill. I don't know if it's a skill. It's just something that happens, right, when you're in state of chelicity. But it's where you start to, and you'll naturally want to do this as you get more experience in your spirit dance, is taking that energy and allowing it to become something that it already has the potential to become. The way I describe it is like, it's like the flowering of something. There's a certain energy pattern or weave coming into you from the rest of the group or even from the environment. And rather than fighting it or just being taken along like a cork in a river by it, it's actually allowing it to become what it can become, whatever it is it wants to grow into through you and through your spirit dance, allowing it to become that thing, whatever it is. And it could be a million different things, but you get a sense that the energy that's coming into you from the other dancers starts to give you an inkling into what it wants to be, it being the standing energy weave of the whole group within the context of nature. It starts to teach you what it, not just what it is in its nature, but what it is in the trunk of the tree. It starts to teach you about its own desires about the creative realm. It's not just the manifest realm, its own desires about the creative realm. And it starts to teach you where it would like to go. And you, in Tengis, change, you facilitate that. You become the facilitator of what the energy wants to become, if you like, if you can think about that. Obviously, it's not thinking about what it wants to be in the way of, you know, it doesn't have a brain and it's not thinking what it wants to become in terms of what would I like to be when I grow up kind of thing. Tyrak is another word for this in Mongol. It's that there's a potential for something. The potential for something to happen, and it doesn't have to happen, but the potential is there, and you allow that potential to grow. You allow the seed to germinate, if you like.
So what's the difference between this one, Mir, and Kindle in this context. And I only ask that, I remember in old Armabella terminology, we used the term provocation for this particular energy change.
Yeah, that's probably a bad word.
It's not a good word because now that you've described it.
It is, if you understand. So what we were learning it, we were also learning it in a martial context. And it in a martial context, it could be understood in that way. The potential is there in the opponent to make some kind of a mistake. And you provoke them in a sense, using this energy change, you provoke them to make that mistake. Spirit dance is an entirely positive thing. In a way, we're using, in that particular concept you're talking about, provocation, we're using Mir to implement an artificial shard, yeah? Which is the shard being, we cut the energy flow of the opponent so that they are wrong-footed, they're unable to do what it is they intend to do because there's a potential for a mistake there. We realize that potential for a mistake is there and we allow that mistake to grow. That's mere facilitating shard. It's a very, very martial way to look at it. And I'm not denying that that's not an application of it, but I don't think it's the greatest way to describe it in terms
for
of
this
dance.
Context. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you asked about the difference between Asarch and Tengis.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Asarch is genuinely some new change. Yeah. Mm. It's some new changes being introduced into the weave. Yeah. Whereas Tengis is not new. The potential for that change is already there. Indeed, the weave, in a sense, wants the change, yeah? And you simply facilitate, yeah? Whereas Kindle is like the birth of a new star, yeah?
Yeah.
Or it's like if you think of a nebula, a stellar nebula, Kindle is like the birth of a new star within that nebula. It's like introducing a new kind of warmth or energy that wasn't there before. With Tengis, the energy very much was there before, but it wasn't becoming necessarily all that it could become. And you are facilitating that change for it to become all that it could become.
Gotcha.
It's just as well that we're not doing a video podcast, you know, because when I'm talking about this stuff, my arms are going all over the place when I'm doing these spirit dance movements. It might be interesting. Maybe I'll stick a camera on myself. It might be interesting. I wasn't thinking about it. I was totally thinking about talking to you. I just realized that
your
I was doing
going
it. There's a familiarity with spirit dance, you know, what it does to you and where you can practice in a recording session, you know. But yeah, I'm often doing that. So maybe I'll stick a camera on myself, stick it in the patrons area so when I'm recording an episode, just so people can see what it looks like. We need to be talking about spirit dance or something, you know. I think that's it. But in terms of your own spirit dance, again, there's a potential to become something. You know, just that simple exercise that we talked about, walking towards a tree in the tarot position, the tree touches your arm and swings you around it. The potential for that turn is already there. You're just facilitating it by really not resisting what the tree wants by not resisting what nature wants. It's a very simplistic example, but there would be a individualistic spirit dance example of that. So again, remember on the subject of Toyra and Bichik, this kind of folk dance, this round dance that they do in Mongolia. So now here's, you remember I said there was something that could allow within this folk dance tradition, within this spirit dance tradition, that could allow individuals who are, say, what should we say, more advanced or to level their spirit dance at a level. I mean, obviously, because when you're all holding hands, it's almost lowest common denominator, right? As a very, very advanced shaman, there's things that you can do to help people through the chain. Yeah, you can actually do things with energy through the chain, but that's not what I'm talking about here. Tarak is when an energy stream is cut or severed. Yeah, so what happens naturally as part of this dance is perhaps one of the shamans, probably one of the shamans to start off with, will naturally feel a moment when the energy has become too large to maintain the chain. Yeah. Mm-hmm. These two things, Tarak and Tengis, they are there to deal with situations where there's an excess of energy. And they're two different ways of dealing with it. In terms of Tengis, the weave wants to become something. And it almost has a pressure there to become that. And the shaman allows that. That's releasing that pressure. Mm-hmm. But in Tarak, there's something that needs to happen and the chain can't necessarily be be maintained. The single thread can't necessarily be maintained. And so the shaman forks the thread, F-O-R-K, forks the thread. This is what Tairak is. One energy stream splitting into two, or one energy stream severing another. The thing that happens in the Turin Butchig is that one of the shamans, probably to start off with, will break contact with the person standing next to them. Maybe it often happens on one of those compressive movements into the center, and they may fully go into half task, maybe on a turn or something like that. And they will move into the center of the circle. Or, you know, if there's a bonfire, they don't move right into the center of the circles. You know, the circle also doesn't have to be perfectly even around the bonfire. The circle can make a space with the bonfire or tree slightly to one side to make a bigger space to do this. And they will, as part of their original flow, without breaking the thread, they've just forked the thread. The original thread is still running through the group. They've created another thread that runs off it that goes into their own individual spirit dance within the center of the circle. And they dance around in the center of the circle doing their individual spirit dance. And then when they come back to the circle, they will open up into the tarot position and scoop one of the other dancers out of the circle as they rejoin it. And then that dancer, so they're not deciding, the dancers themselves, other than the first guy or lady who does it, they're not deciding when and where they're going to split off. It's just happening. They are being scooped out of the circle and they're creating their own thread and fork, and they move into the center. And maybe two or three people do this at once if you've got a big circle of people, and they all do their individualistic, not individualistic, but their own individual spirit dance, and it's whatever they want. They're not then following the group, but they are maintaining the thread. They've forked that thread off the standing thread that's running through the group. They do their complex weave, or more or less complex, depending on their ability, weave within the center of the circle. And then when they rejoin with this tarot-based scoop, almost like you're scooping someone else out of the line, their thread that they've maintained, hopefully, throughout their individual dance, then joins back into the thread of the whole group with a natural joining again, which would be Meld Negdech, right? And they continue as part of the group, while the person that they've scooped out has taken their own forking thread off that, which they're running through their own individual spirit dance. And the great thing about this is people can then practice to their own level of shamanic.
That is absolutely fascinating, because it's absolutely what happens in this Indian Garba dance. It's like multiple rings will form, and it's like the ones in the middle may be doing something much more complex, and then the outside ones are doing something a little bit more simple, and there's more people that join in on the outside, and then some might go and drift into the middle. So, you know, it's just another example of it, but yeah, I thought that was quite interesting.
You see that the example of Tairak that I've given is a legitimate example of Tairak. You are genuinely forking. You're not allowing the weave to die. You're not allowing the energy thread to die that's going on in the overall dance. All you're doing is taking a fork off it and creating your own sub-weave within it. And then you join it again. But the thread is at no point actually broken. It's just forked. Do you follow what I mean? A legitimate application of this in spirit dance. Another legitimate application of it in individual spirit dance could be that you are dancing and the energy is becoming very, very, very strong, and then there's an obstacle or something like that, and maybe you just suddenly shift your weight from one foot to the other and kill the momentum, the physical momentum of your body towards that obstacle, pushed by changing weighting on your feet very sharply. But you don't actually allow the thread of your dance to die. What you do is you do a very tight turn, and that change of weighting, that sharp change of weighting, allows you to do more of an angled turn than the normal smooth turn that you would make in typical spirit dance. So there's another legitimate application of it. What is not legitimate is to hop from one foot to the other just because it fits in with the beat of the drum. Yeah. I mean, it's, I guess it's legitimate in a way. It's a kind of spirit dance. You can do it in a state of chillicity very easily. The reason it is so simplistic makes it very, very easy to do it in a state of chillicity. The problem is the energy radar that you're creating for, remember the purpose of shamanic technique?
It just continuously cuts off, doesn't it? It's like it starts, cuts.
You're making a rubbish radar, basically. It's a bit like comparing a, you know, when these high-tech radars that they use for air traffic control with a tin can and a bit of string, right? You know, well, you can use a tin can and a bit of string for communication, you know, but you probably want something a bit better than that if you're doing this at a professional kind of level for, I mean, for air traffic control. You don't want to be standing outside with a megaphone shouting up the plane, you know, left a bit, right a plane. It's not the greatest idea, you know. So so that's just the warning about Shard. Shard is a destructive thing. Shard is a destructive thing. And it's something that can be used. I mean, for instance, one of the applications in life with Shard, Tyrak, is when you're in a hole, stop digging. If the behaviors that you're exhibiting in your life are getting you bad results and you keep exhibiting those behaviors and you keep getting those bad results, the application of Shard is to change those behaviors, right? You're not killing yourself, literally. That would be a dumb application of Shard. You're just killing the behaviors that aren't getting you where you want to be in life. So in a way, you're maintaining the thread of your life. It's still you, but you're making fairly drastic change in the thread of your life. So there's a Tyrak on a bigger scale. That, to me, that's the positive aspect of Tyrak. The negative aspect of Tyrak is, oh, we don't like these people in that country over there. Let's go and bomb them and then we won't have a problem. No, nonsense. You will have a problem forevermore if you do that.
Yeah. Well, here's a very simplistic example to try and get the point across, because it's become a little bit of a running joke, which is really funny. You know, let's say I've got this movement and I just go side to side, and this is the classic thing. Okay, I keep coming to you, Damon. I go, Damon, I'm really excited. I've discovered something, Damon. I'm going side to side, and you go, ah, Tyrak, you know. So let's say we've got this sort of one experience I had. So let's say I'm holding a rock and I'm using that rock to push myself backwards and forwards, okay? And I'm just rocking. And to anybody watching outside from outside, it must look like I won't repeat it here, but a little bit challenged. But let's say I'm going backwards and forwards like this. And when I'm forwards, I stop and I come back, I stop. I go forwards, I stop, right? So that's one version of it. The other version is the same thing, but instead of stopping, you use what we've talked about today. We use Gaia, we use the cycle, and we come back forward and we cycle it back. And we come, and also when we're going forwards, we're compressing, and backwards we're expanding. And so in terms of the incorrect use of Tyrak, or the should I say the simplistic use of Tyrak, what is the difference between those two examples of a repetitive movement that repeats itself over and over again, which in my experience really helped me understand what it means to become in a quote-unquote trance-like altered state? And, you know, anyway, there we go.
Well, all I was going to say is I much preferred the second version of your exercise to the first one, mate. That's what I was going to say. But I mean, in a way, there is Tyrak being applied. But the fact that you're going from one side to another, you know, this repetitive motion, it's a stepping stone, isn't it?
Yes.
Lots of shamans do it. But if you notice, if you look at a lot of the Mongol shamans, when they're doing Bukhin Hengrig, they'll sit on the ground, the head's inside the drum, and they're beating the drum to get the energy radar going on their body. But they'll start turning from side to side in a rhythmic kind of way, in a repetitive kind of way, yeah? And it's getting them, helping them get into that state, and it does. I mean, I've done this stuff a long time, and maybe I'm a bit down on these sort of simplistic movements to get into that state because I really don't need the help to get into that state. But maybe that's just because of the years and years and years of practice. The point is that it does help get in that state side to side. But if you keep watching them, it will lead into something more. Yeah. They won't just do that. They're using it as a way in. It's like a
and
door.
And that's perhaps
into
the difference between a ritual and actual technique, isn't it? Because you also have these practices called the, I think one that springs to mind is called the Zikir, the Z-I-K-I-R, which is a Sufi thing. And I think they sway the head from side to side, but in spirals and in circles. There's videos on YouTube of that. But that's another interesting one because it's, again, this side-to-side movement, but it's not, it doesn't look like it's particularly cutting. I mean, maybe some do, maybe some don't, but there is this sort of spiraling going on.
You can do that. I mean, in a way, you're doing side-to-side in tilling, aren't you? But the thing I like about the exercise, even though it's a simple exercise, is you're going side-to-side, but you're not doing it in a simplistic tyrac-tyrac tank kind of way. You're using all of the eight changes, every single one of them, including a bit of tyrac, to facilitate the side-to-side movement. And that's really, you know, that's what I really like that tilling exercise because it has all eight changes in it.
Yeah, so side-to-side movements are okay as a stepping stone given using those side-to-side movements by trying to infuse the changes within that movement. But we should think of that as a stepping stone to
do it
spirit
it's
dance
useful,
and then obviously
not because it's easy.
Well.
Do it because it's useful, not because it's easy.
Yeah,
that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, but obviously we want to understand all these changes. As shamans, we want to understand them all. Yeah, that's it. And you know what I mean by understanding? I don't mean understanding in your mind. I mean understanding, sure, on the baseline a bit. That's us talking about it on these episodes. But much more importantly, in the midline, the physical level, and the top line, the energy level, the creative level, those are the important ways to quote unquote understand these changes. And that's practice, practice, practice.
Fantastic. So you mentioned that we could spend, you know, hours on just one of these energy changes. So maybe we'll get around to those.
Eight more episodes, Joe.
eight more episodes. I'm probably more than that knowing us. But, you know, since starting these episodes back up again, we've got a document going and there's already like about 12 to 15
at our new rate of getting episodes out, there's nothing to stop us doing quite a bit of stuff, right?
We just got to work through it. But also thinking about how we're going to practice, what we're going to do next, because we've already said, you know, there's other stage three techniques to talk about. There is stage three in general to go back to and talk about in terms of the spirit dance. There's Arma Bella, which is a whole host of, and
there's
also
stage three with the drum as well.
Stage three with the drum. There's so much. So anyway, we'll just keep plugging away week by week and see where it goes. But
I'm really dreading
we'll just see where it goes.
I'm really dreading getting onto five though, Joe, because every time you go deeper into shamanism, the use of words gets harder and harder and harder. But you're going to like stage five. You're going to like stage five because it will be unavoidable. Talking about catalysts will be unavoidable. So,
If you look back a few episodes, you will see one that we did on psychedelic drugs, which is not the term that we choose to use, but psychedelic aids or whatever you want to call it, psilocybin, mescaline, that kind of stuff. And we did a whole episode on it, and it's really worth listening to so you can get an idea of what they are, what they do from a practical shamanic perspective. And I think you might find that interesting, especially if you're the kind of person like me in the early days that went, you know, exploring that stuff. But yeah, really good episode. I think it's about around the episode 30 mark, something like that. So Damon, is there anything else you want to finish off with, or shall we close it down there? And
no, but you may have heard this before. I'll just make the point that the early days is absolutely the worst stuff to type, the worst time in your shamanic practice to be exploring that stuff. The early days. Stay away from it in the early days. There's Uncle Damon's advice. Take it or leave it.
Uncle Damon. There's a YouTube channel if ever there was one. Uncle Damon.
Cool.
I do
hope that, you know, that there's a specific practice that is practice within very shamanic communities is Toiro and Butchig, and I thought it'd be useful to show it in a context like that, and maybe a tiny little bit of anthropology in this episode as well. So there you go.
And that's stage five.
No, that's the dance we're talking about today, the round dance, Toiro and Butchig.
Oh, okay. So coming back to the dance and exploring and
yeah,
talking
that
about
just thought I'd
using
put a
an aid within that
like
context.
That.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, there's another idea. I'll have to put that in the document. Okay.
No, I wasn't talking about using a catalyst within that context. It is a catalyst by itself without any help.
Oh, sorry. I get you.
All I was doing was just saying what I was trying to get across in the episode. I tried to do it in a more interesting way by introducing a little bit of Mongolian anthropology into the episode. I don't know if it succeeded or not for that. So.
Well, I presume the first four energy changes apply to that as well, right? So maybe we need to go back to those four and apply it to the example here so there isn't a discontinuity between it. That would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, another thing we can do is talk about some other energy changes as well that are outside of the quote-unquote official eight. But there's also other things. This would be a really good time to talk about the Kagura Zutome, which is Miki's version of this. It would be a really good time to talk about that as well. So there's all sorts of stuff we could do about. Well, we'll see what we'll do next.
Episode five. This is episode four in the stage four. Or is it episode five? It might be. No, I think it's episode four in the stage four deep dive. So maybe that's for episode five.
Cool.
Should be cool. Okay, so you happy with that, Damon? Should we leave it there?
All good, mate.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for listening. It's a pleasure doing this podcast, as always. And if you can recommend this podcast or gently nudge somebody to go and listen, if you think they would benefit from it, then please do. We can spread this podcast by word of mouth. And as always, you can head to wherever you listen to your podcast on and give us an honest review. That'll definitely help us get our podcast in front of more people. That would be greatly appreciated. You can also go to patreon.com/wovenenergy. Support us over there as well. Thanks for listening, and we will see you in the next one.
Thanks a lot, guys.